Hello everyone, my name is Mike and I'm a recovered alcoholic.
Hi, I'm Mike.
And a loving, powerful God, of my understanding, has kept me sober since August 15, 2007. And I share that I'm a recovered alcoholic, not to cause separation in this room and not to be arrogant, but to give the newcomer hope. I have not thought about having a drink, or I don't think about drinking or not having a drink in a very long time. And I think that offers a newcomer hope, because it did for me. When I heard people announce themselves as recovered alcoholics, I was very curious as to why. You know, I make plans and God laughs. You know, I haven't been to this meeting probably about over a year now. And my wife goes to school on Tuesday nights, and tonight I got a babysitter. And my plan was to come and just hang out and, you know, fellowship and just relax and sit back and listen to a great speaker. And, you know, Chris Axman speak tonight. And but it's always an honor to share my experience, strength, and hope, and hopefully I help somebody in this room. Just real briefly, my experience with steps 1, 2, and 3, you know, being powerless over alcohol, what that looked like for me is, you know, for many, many years, many experiences, I said I didn't want to drink anymore, and I kept doing it. And when I put a drink or any other substance in my body, something would happen to me that wouldn't happen to normal people. You know, I'd experience this phenomenon of craving, which I didn't have the ability to stop on my own power. You know, I couldn't guarantee you how much I was going to drink and how long I was going to be out. And pretty much most of the time I got into trouble. You know, I'd be laid up in a hospital bed and I'd look my family in the eyes and swear to them up and down that I never wanted to drink again. And I meant it with all my heart. And if you would have hooked me up to a lie detector test, I would have passed with flying colors. And I'd walk out of the hospital, and within a half hour, I'm getting loaded again. You know, many sweet promises like that throughout my, you know, drinking career. My life being unmanageable. When I first came in, I was suicidal. Thank God for the drink. It saved my life. It was my solution many, many times. I used to wake up in the morning towards the end and say, do I drink today or do I blow my brains out? You know, and thank God for the drink. The unmanageability, you know, crept back up into my life from, you know, 2 years, 2.5 years in sobriety, which, again, pushed me to, again, revisit the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous with a new sponsor and to have a new experience. What happened was I started to fall into self-pity and resentment and hitting sprees and just feeling uncomfortable with myself and, you know, just wasn't doing my job, going out there and helping as many alcoholics as I probably should have, and I was getting stuck in self-pity and stuck in my bed. So that was my most recent unmanageability, and hitting sprees in certain areas of my life, which I won't get into, but didn't feel like a recovered alcoholic. You know, coming to believe that a power greater than myself could restore me to sanity when I first came into these rooms, you know, I seen it working in young guys like me. They believed in a power greater than themselves. They were talking about God. They were smiling. They had a bright light in their eyes. People liked being around them. They were having fun. You know, my sponsor was a DJ. He was DJing in clubs, you know, at the age of 26 years old when he got sober. And, like, you know, that was like, you know, a shock to me. How do you do that, you know? I don't know how to go somewhere and not drink, you know? And, you know, I watched the work in other people. And, you know, I believed that there was something out there greater than me. And that's all I needed was that little chink in the armor, that there was something out there greater than me. It wasn't me. And, you know, the insanity was that I kept drinking over and over and over again, even when I didn't want to. And it wasn't the crazy things that Mike did out there when he was drinking and when he was drunk. When I first came in, my experience at the third step was that my decision was pretty much that I was going to take actions that were going to bring me away from a drink rather than closer to a drink, bring me closer to a God rather than away from a God. And it was that simple, and I was just going to go through with the rest of the program to the best of my ability. My most recent experience was a little bit different. It meant a lot more to me. My conception of the third step has grown and changed throughout the years. And today what it is for me is that really, I'm sure you've heard other people say this, but that my life is none of my business, that whatever comes down the road, whatever is put in front of me, you know, it's okay. You know, whether I hit the lotto tomorrow or if I lose my job, you know, it's none of my business. You know, I just got to just keep pushing forward. And doing the right thing and, you know, being a responsible member of Alcoholics Anonymous and a family member and just keep seeking God and doing His work. I'm going to share my most recent experience with steps 4, 5, and 6. Because I've done a cycle here before. I'm sure there's a lot of new people here, but, you know, and I'm just going to share how I've done it recently and today how I take guys through the work. You know, my experience, when I reach step four, I was told it's not a mental exercise, all right? And the last thing I wanted to do was to just keep thinking, you know, just keep adding names onto my resentment list, because I'd got caught up with that in the past, mostly with amends, like thinking about names that I had to add to my amends list, and the list just kept growing, and I felt like I was never ever going to finish my amends, so we didn't want to do the same thing here with the resentments. And basically, you know, who pissed me off? Let's pray and ask God, who's pissing me off? And I prayed and asked God, who's pissing me off? What's blocking me from having a relationship with you? And I started writing, and out came a bunch of names. You know, usually it's mom and dad and brother and sister and, you know, my in-laws, of course. You know, I live with my in-laws today, so they're all over my... Oh, my God, I'm being recorded. My wife's in AA. Anyhow... I was going to say, I do live a life beyond my wildest dreams, except that I do live with my in-laws, but anyhow, you know, so I started writing, and, you know, these names just came out on the list, and they just popped out, and then when the pen stopped moving, I was done, you know, and I just like to share, I've done inventories different ways, and I'm not saying that that was the wrong way, and this is the right way, you know, this was just the new way that was introduced to me, and then I'm sure further down the road, somebody else will introduce something new to me, and I'll be open to that, too. You know, I always like to remain teachable, and I always ask God for that. So after having this list, I went to a second column, and, you know, I listed the things that were pissing me off about them. What were they doing to irritate me? You know, and the book says we're usually as definite as this example. And the book uses 2 to 11 words. You know, I wasn't going to get into... You know, my dad threw me out of the house because I didn't do the laundry and I made a mess. And then when I came back to the house, you know, he called me a jerk. And, then, you know, dad threw me out of the house, period, you know. Usually as definite as this example. So I did go over a couple of times, you know. So anyhow, any time before I wrote, I would pray. You know, when the pen stopped moving, I was done. You know, and then I moved on to the third column. You know, what was it affecting me? Was it affecting my self-esteem, my personal relations, my ambitions, my pocketbook, my sex relations, my pride, my security? You know, was it hurting or threatening any of these? I wrote some inventory the other night that I'm going to share. 2 o'clock in the morning on a Saturday night, I caught some guys robbing my car. They stole an iPod out of my car, and I jumped in my car and I caught up with them 2 blocks away, and, you know, I chased them with a baseball bat just to scare them to get my stuff back. I didn't hurt nobody. I actually let them go. I didn't call the cops. But, you know, the audacity of them, you know, getting wise with me after they stole my stuff, you know, how dare they do that, you know? They pissed me off, you know? What did I write? What was the cause for this guy getting there, you know, for this guy pissing me off? Why? Cause. He got nasty with me. He played a tough guy role, all right? What did it affect? It affected my self-esteem. I felt very less than. My personal relations, because I went home and I took it out on other people. Ambitions, I can't get a good night's sleep now because I'm afraid he's going to come back and, you know, do something to my house. My security for that reason. You know, could it affect my pocketbook? He stole something out of my car. You know, I would have had to pay for it if I didn't get it back. And after seeing that, you know, like I did with all my other resentments, I listed my mistakes. And what were my mistakes? Well, I was afraid, you know. The book tells me, was I afraid? Was I selfish, dishonest, or self-seeking? And I was afraid. I was really afraid that these 3 or 4 guys were going to, you know, kick my butt, you know, when I got over there. And so out of being afraid, I said a few things to them that I shouldn't have said. I started playing a tough guy role with them instead of just getting my stuff back from them. What did I do? I started playing a tough guy role. Do you know who I am? I would have beat the crap out of you. If I would have had my gun, I would have shot you. I'm here to tell you, I don't even own a gun. So, you know, here I am. And now these guys aren't being afraid of me, and they're not backing down. So what does that do? That pisses me off even more. I'm being dishonest with them. I'm telling them what a tough guy I am. And really, I'm not. I'm going to go home and I'm going to pray for them, you know? So, but basically, that's how it went with all, you know, when I wrote my thoughts up. Basically, the same guidelines there. What were my mistakes? You know, what is it inside of me that's making me feel resentful at these people? What did I do to them to cause them harm? You know? And so with that, like, you know, my first experience, I really got to see, like, it's really not everybody else in this world, you know? It's me. You know, maybe some people are spiritually sick just like me, you know? And the rewarding part of doing this and, you know, having good teachers and good sponsorship, you know, is that I'm able to see that I can get better. You know, I cannot do those mistakes again. I could ask God to remove the character defects that are causing me to be angry at these people. I could practice to be selfless. I could practice to be honest. I could do that stuff, but there is no way in hell I'm ever going to change any of those people that are causing me harm. I just don't have the power to do that. You know, so that's like so much relief. So after my resentments, I went and I, same thing with the fears. I prayed to God and I asked God, what's blocking me from you? Please reveal it to me. Help me write it on paper. What am I afraid of? And I started writing. You know, and the fears just started coming out. When the pen stopped moving, maybe I got up and, you know, I got something to drink, came back, I prayed again, and I wrote some more, and, you know, the fears just flying out, you know? And, you know, fear running my life. You know, like I said, most recently, about a year ago, again, at work, I'm so concerned how other people are perceiving me. What does my boss think of me? What are my coworkers thinking of me? What do the general contractors think of me? What are the clients thinking of me? You know, so what I'm doing is I'm living a life based on fear. I'm waking up in the morning, I'm going to work, I'm trying to please everybody else because I'm afraid if I don't please them, you know, something's going to happen to me. You know what I'm saying? And I'm not going to be happy. You know, and I love it says, like, driven by 100 forms of fear. And what my life used to look like is I would wake up in the morning and resentment and fear would be sitting out in the car in the driver's seat saying, come on, get in, you know, and basically just drive me around all day long, you know, and there I am making decisions based on self, you know, making decisions based on fear and then saying, suffering consequences from that and saying, why me? You know, it's like having a girlfriend and telling her, you can't go here, you can't hang out with those girls, you're not allowed to go to the club on Friday night, but I am. I'm going to check your phone book to see if you're cheating on me, and I'm going to check all your emails. And meanwhile, the girl's a great girl, and she's an honest girl, but what am I doing? I'm pushing her away, you know? And then what does she do? She gets fed up. She gets disgusted. And it's like, I don't want nothing to do with you no more. And yeah, I'm going to go start seeing someone else. But how could you do this to me, you know? But wait a minute. Your decision's based on fear. Checking up on her and, you know, really holding her hostage is what probably caused her to go out there and find someone else. You know, my whole life was like that. And love when the book says, when it made us cocky, it was worse, you know? You know what? Screw you. I don't need you no more. You know? And then she walks out on me. No, baby, please come back. You know? So I listed my fears. And I had to ask, you know, why do I have these fears? And the answer is given to me in the book. Wasn't it because self-reliance failed me? You know? And self-reliance in other areas, you know, I was able to get over certain fears. Certain fears, I could not get myself past them. You know, a few years ago, I used to box, and I'd have to go to a sparring match, and before I'd go to the boxing gym, I'd be really afraid. Oh my God, this guy's going to kick my ass. He's going to lay me out. I'm going to be unconscious. You know, I'm going to be embarrassed in front of everybody. I'm not going to make it to the Golden Gloves. And I'd have all this running through my head. But I would muster up enough courage in myself, and I'd get myself into the boxing ring. Self-reliance was good enough. I could do that on my own. But get me to break up with a girlfriend, self-reliance is not enough. It failed, you know. Giving a wonderful fear prayer, too. You know, I use it today pretty much on a daily basis. God, please remove my fear and show me what you would have me be. You know, and identify with my last sponsor when he said, I used to think it said, show me what you would have me do. So right away, I'd be in fear, and I'd get on the phone and start calling other alcoholics and, you know, running around, and I got to do something. But maybe God just wants me to be kind, be loving, be still, be gentle, be selfless, think of someone else. You know, maybe not necessarily doing, you know. Just going back a little bit too, little resentment prayer I skipped over. When I was writing the resentments, and I was really starting to see, like, how people are perhaps spiritually sick like me. And I said a little prayer over for each person. And what that was, God, help me to cheerfully grant them the same patience, tolerance, and pity that I would grant a sick friend, cheerfully grant a sick friend. God, save me from being angry. You know, how could I be helpful to this person? They're a sick person. You know, thy will be done, not mine. You know, and I try to use that pretty much on a daily basis also. And that's one of the great things of actually taking someone through the process is that it reminds me, like I read these things over and over. Sometimes I'll forget that we have a resentment prayer, we have a fear prayer. But every time I take someone through the work, it's like I'm going through the work myself. And I remember to use these things. Then moving on to sex, you know, my first inventory, it was, you know, I was all over the place with it, you know, harming this one, three ring circuses going on in the meetings, and, you know, I caused a lot of sex harm out there. You know, like I tell guys today, I really don't care how many men you slept with, how many women you slept with, you know, if you've been molested, if you molested anyone, it's, you know, I really don't care. Let's just, where are you selfish? Where are you causing harm to people? You know, let's get down to that. My experience with my last sex inventory is totally different than my first one. Today I'm a married man, and to be honest with you, there was three names on that list. Two people I was with before my wife and I got married, and my wife. So, which was big for me because I used to be, you know, sometimes I could beat myself up. You know what I mean? No matter how many guys I'm sponsoring, how many meetings I'm attending, how much service I'm doing, how good I am to my family, my ego always tells me I'm doing a lot worse than I am. And sometimes it'll tell me I'm doing a lot better. But it was actually good to see that, you know what? There's three people on my list. You know, I'm progressing. I'm spiritually progressing. I'm not hurting people today like I used to. You know, I'm actually doing some good out there today. You know, I'm actually making amends for all the harms that I caused out there to women that I actually couldn't actually go stepping on their doorstep or go out looking for them and find them because I'd cause more harm. Today I get to do that in my home with my family, my wife, and other women, and my daughter. So basically, what I did was I answered the 9 questions in the big book. I might forget them right now, but, you know, was I selfish, dishonest, and inconsiderate? Whom did I hurt? You know, did I unjustifiably arouse jealousy, bitterness, suspicion? You know, where was I at fault? What could I have done instead? You know, I've answered those questions. And again, it was not about seeing what a terrible guy I am. You know, let's find out where I'm being selfish, and let's bring this to God and come up with a new sex ideal. You know, after doing that writing, I had to sit down with my sponsor and My experience with the fifth step this time was that it was done within 2 hours. My first one took about 2 days, over 10 hours. You know, again, I'm not going to say there's any right or wrong. Just my new experience. And my next one might change also. Every time I do a fifth step, I just feel like a load lifted off my shoulders. You know, I experienced the promise that I could look the world in the eyes. And I am going to go back to my first experience. My very first experience is that I got drunk after my fifth step. And the reason why is because I held on to something that I was going to bring to the grave with me. I had a deep, dark sex conduct that nobody was ever going to know about. Nobody. And I withheld it from my sponsor, along with a few other things that I didn't think were so important. Within a few weeks, I got drunk. And it wasn't until when I came back, that I was willing to share that with somebody. And I'll never forget the day that I shared that. It was like the weight of the world was lifted off my shoulders, and I was able to look everybody in the eye I had about 90 days, and I spoke on my sponsor's anniversary, and I remember people coming up to me after the meeting, and I didn't have to look down when they were shaking my hand. I was able to look them in the eyes, and I really felt like a part of Alcoholics Anonymous after that day. And I always put this out there when I speak on the fifth step. If anybody in this room is holding on to something and struggling, I will sit down with you after the meeting, and I will share with you what I was holding on to for years, if that will make you become a little more willing to share it with me or anybody else. I'm not some creep that just wants to hear dirty sex stuff and sick secrets. Actually, sometimes I don't like it. I get very sick from it, and I need to do inventory with somebody else afterwards. But I've shared that at meetings, and I've had actually more than two experiences where somebody has approached me after a meeting and got free from stuff they were holding on to for many years. And actually, one of my greatest joys I get to experience today in Alcoholics Anonymous is sitting on the other side of the table and listening to a fifth step and watching people get rid of stuff, resentments and fears and sex conducts, watching them get free of that after holding on to it for many, many, many years. You know, one of my sponsees is in his 40s now, and just watching him get rid of stuff that was he was holding on to for over 35 years was just like amazing. You know, it's an experience that I think nobody should miss. That being said, after I did my fifth step, I went home and I spent some quiet time, and I went over the first five proposals, and I could say, I could actually be honest this time and say that, you know, there was nothing else I was holding on to. Now, I'm not saying, like, did I miss something from the second grade or the third grade? You know, am I holding on to something that I am blatantly aware of that needs to be spoken about with my sponsor or another human being? You know, am I free of that stuff? And, you know, the last couple of times I did a fifth step, my experiences right afterwards, I was free. I wasn't holding on to anything. Then I had to ask myself the question, like, was I willing to let go of everything that I found was objectionable? You know, anything that was blocking me from my higher power, loving God of my understanding, was I willing to let that go? Anything I became aware of in steps 4 and 5, all my character defects, playing God, not trusting God, selfish, dishonest, self-seeking, fear, am I willing to let go of that stuff so I could be a better use to God? And I don't know, whenever I did a sixth step, both of my experiences was just like, take it. I don't want it. I'm not holding on to anything. I'm willing. What do I do from here? You know, the book says if we're not willing, you know, we ask God to be willing, you know. The way it was explained to me this time is that if I'm being selfish, what do? I have to start practicing being selfless, you know. You know, I can't ask God. It's like I tell people all the time. If I want to wake up tomorrow morning, I can't just ask God, God, wake me up tomorrow at 8 a.m. I need to set my alarm clock, and then I'll get up. You know, I got to put in some type of action. If I want to be honest, I have to start practicing honesty. And I'm not saying that I'm going to relieve the character defect of dishonesty on my own power, but I got to put in some type of effort so God will help me, you know. You know, and with that, I just like to say, I was joking around before, I truly do live a life beyond my wildest dreams. My life is perfect. I do go through situations today. And as long as I keep seeking God, you know, the power of the 12 steps, the fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous, you know, I'll be all right. You know, and helping another alcoholic. Thanks for letting me share.